For the past 12 years, supporters of the arts in Michigan have had a passionate advocate in Lansing, because that's how long John Bracey has served as director of the Michigan Council for Arts and Cultural Affairs. He is retiring December 28th, so it seems like a good time to get his take on the state of arts and culture in Michigan. John, welcome. I'm wondering, as you think back over these 12 years, what was your personal goal every day when you'd go to work? How do you view your role as the director?
That's a great question, Cynthia, because it's changed. It's absolutely changed. When we went through some really tough times, like most of the state did, and we're nearly eliminated. So my goal during those years—
Keep the doors open and the lights on.
It was basically survive.
Yeah.
You know, how do I convince policymakers to continue to have faith in us and survive, especially when there's a governor in office who wants us to be eliminated? So those were difficult years. But the mission that I've always felt that we have, which is to provide access, I take that very seriously. And so I would say the goal that I have, even during those years, was what can I do for arts and cultural organizations so that they can provide access to their citizens and make their one square mile of the universe the best place that it can be. And that's what I think about every single day.
When I say those words, the arts, or I say cultural affairs, what does that mean to you?
Sure. Well, we have a really broad definition. You speak with folks and you hear the arts, and they immediately, and because the arts are really venerated in a lot of ways in terms of the fine arts. You know, they think of the great painters, the great musicians, et cetera. And that's the way that it should be. But when I think about the arts and culture, I think about all of those organizations that have as their mission creativity and teaching kids to express themselves, teaching individuals how to find a way to understand what it is to be someone else, to walk in someone else's shoes, to provide families in a city a chance to go out and meet their neighbors, to have fun with their kids and do those activities that arts and cultural events involve. That's how we think about it. And then, and we're very broad, as I said. I mean, of course, we work with the DIAs of the world, UMS, Meyer Gardens. They're amazing places. But we also work with the Copper Country Suzuki Festival, the City of Ironwood and the work that they're doing at the Ironwood Theater, or the Dowagiac Dogwood Festival. You know, those kinds of things that are so important to their communities that you just have to love what they do. We work with the science centers. We consider that cultural affairs. The zoos. The Detroit Zoo is doing, it's not just over a million people that visit it and see those exhibitions that they do. The research that they do there is amazing. And
The public never sees that.
No, but, yeah. No. They see the frogs, but they don't understand the research that they're doing with those frogs, which is, I know, it's incredible. So it's really, really broad definition for us.
And when you think of the state funding the arts, what would be lost if it didn't?
Access immediately. Besides some organizations going away, you would lose access. And let me bring it really close to home for you, Cynthia. Mm-hmm. If government isn't funding the arts, public broadcasting is in a world of hurt. And in some areas of the country, and I've done a lot of work nationally, but not just there, but in more remote rural areas, even in Michigan, sometimes public broadcasting is the citizens' access to arts and culture. And, you know, I can really get off on a tangent with this because I feel very, very strongly about it. You know, years ago, back in when the UNESCO charter was being created in the 40s, right? If you look at...
we're talking United Nations.
Yeah, the United Nations. Don't hold me to this, but I think it's like Article 27 or 28 or somewhere in that area. They established a citizen's right to access to arts and culture as a human right. And to me, when you sign on to something that becomes international law, that says that there's a responsibility then that falls directly on the shoulders of that government to help provide that access to their citizens, because it is an absolute human right. I feel that very strongly.
As you cited the Great Recession, the very, very hard times in Michigan, there's been a sense out there that, well, that's the icing on the cake. What were those struggles like? You know, that we can cut the arts funding. We need to keep the lights on. We need to keep, water,
sure.
the basic services.
Sure. Well, Cynthia, some of that was our own fault in terms of the broader field of arts and culture, because we don't always tell our story real well. And justifiably so. I mean, I don't fault them for this. They're looking at the next exhibit. You know, it's a theater group saying the show has to go on. What's the next show? Without thinking that, you know, we need to tell our policymakers what we're doing in their district that's helping kids. We had 700 kids go through here last year to see, you know, an exhibit at the museum. That lack of communication with policymakers and the citizens in a more broad sense leads to that kind of thought, because it's completely a fallacy. It's an absolute need. There are jobs involved. I think just our clients alone, and we don't represent the entirety. I mean, we don't do anything with the for-profit organizations. Mm-hmm. It's all not-for-profit, but we represent about 17,000 full-time employees. And I always get upset, too, because connected to that sort of, this is a frill, we don't really need it. And then this has always been a struggle for me throughout my career, too. But you think about how the arts relate to other sectors. I mean, just tourism alone. You look at tourism, and cultural tourism across the state is almost a $2 billion out of the is it $10 billion, $19 billion? I forget exactly mm-hmm. what the tourism economy is, but it's like
a big chunk.
Arts and culture is almost 20% of that amount. And that says something. You know, when we ask arts and cultural organizations to report on their final reports to us, mm-hmm. of course, you know, what their attendance was, you know, the individuals benefiting, it's usually somewhere between 25 and 30 million people walking through the doors of these organizations. And that doesn't even count the Arbitron numbers that you guys have. We don't count broadcast numbers. If we did that, it would be enormous. And you start comparing that to other sectors, and you start seeing that, wait a minute, this is huge. In and of itself, it's huge. You really shouldn't have to justify supporting arts and culture by its economic impact, any of those things. It in and of itself is worthy of support. And that doesn't even get into the education side of thing, or how you help to make better citizens in your state, and in the role that arts plays in that, from the time preschool until, you know, it's lifelong learning.
And starting those seeds early.
Yeah.
When you consider the fact that you've been 12 years now as director of the Michigan Council for Arts mm-hmm. and Cultural mm-hmm. Affairs, as you prepare to retire, what's the state of the state when you talk to Arts and Cultural Affairs? How healthy is it? What kind of, what do you see for the future?
I have such mixed feelings about that, you know, in my involvement. In 2002, the Michigan Council for Arts and Cultural Affairs had $26 million to grant statewide. We had a staff of 10 and a couple of other, like, part-time, so it was like 12 people working there. 2010 came around. We had $1.7 million to grant, and at times, I was the employee. Mm. For the most part, we had two people there.
Lean years.
Yeah, it was really, really tough. But times change.
So where are we today?
We're at $10.7 million to grant today.
Not where you were back at the beginning of the century.
Hence the mixed feelings. Mm-hmm. You know, there's always a thought in state government that if you lose money, you don't get money back. Mm-hmm. We've proved that wrong. I feel really good about that. I feel good that we now have seven people working to serve the state. I feel really good about that. I feel a little bit like a failure when I look at we only got 10.7 back.
So challenge for your successor. Who will be?
Absolutely. Oh, she's amazing. I've known her since she was an intern. Mm-hmm. So it's been like 20 years. Her name is Allison Watson. I cannot be happier that they chose her. She's been the programs manager for the Arts Council for the last 7 years. What an amazing choice. The whole team there, it's by far the best staff in state government.
So December 28th comes, you retire. What, when you wake up in the morning of the 29th, will you not miss?
I won't miss.
Go ahead.
I will not miss performance measures. I don't know what jargon-peddling trendmonger came up with the idea of performance measures, but they have almost no relation to the actual work that individuals have to do every single day. I won't miss having to deal with that.
And no more fights with the legislature and the governor's office.
Yeah, you know, I love those guys. I love those guys, though. And they've been so supportive over the last 8 years. The legislature, both chambers, have completely understood now, I think over the last years, the impact that the arts and cultural organizations have on their districts directly. And part of that is because the organizations are much better at letting them know what they're doing, sending the thank you letters that are so very important. And we started informing them more clearly about what our processes really are. Cynthia, you know, you hear all the time about transparency in government. The Michigan Council for Arts and Cultural Affairs actually lives that. We don't make funding decisions ourselves. We put peer review panels together, so it's other arts and cultural professionals reading the grant applications that are based on our guidelines that tell us these are good, strong organizations. We put that funding plan together. The Governor's Council, which is 15 people that get appointed, they look at those funding plans and make those final funding decisions. Then we make the awards. The kicker is we do that in public. All the panels, every single panel is open to the public. We also broadcast it, like on a GoToMeeting kind of thing. So organizations can learn the good and the bad and the ugly about their grant as well as everyone else's. When the legislators started figuring out that we're doing that, they started really paying attention, because what a great way to, you know, send taxpayer money back to taxpayers in their home districts. They've loved it. I think it was a huge factor in the fact that we weren't eliminated, was that we have that process, and they really appreciated it.
Well, wrapping up 12 years as director of the Michigan Council for Arts and Cultural Affairs, John Bracey, it was a pleasure talking with you, and thank you for all you've done for the arts and culture in Michigan.
I've been proud to be their civil servant.
And a note, the Michigan Council for Arts and Cultural Affairs is a financial supporter of Michigan Radio.